This is Radio MD COVID-19 Daily, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. It's Tuesday, May 12th. In this episode, hear about a community-based strategy in California working to reduce hospital volumes, provide free testing, and help those with care post-COVID-19 diagnosis. And now, our news update. A new antibody test was given emergency use approval from the FDA yesterday. In a press release, Abbott Laboratories said it has plans to ship 30 million tests this month. The antibody blood tests show whether a person has had COVID-19 in the past and was either asymptomatic or recovered. The FDA approval means labs will be allowed to use the test even though it doesn't have formal approval or clearance by the FDA. Well, it seems like the home office is becoming a more permanent part of many of our lives. With some tips on how to ergonomically set up your work from home station, Radio MD Scott Webb.
With so many people working from home these days, it's likely that many of us are experiencing eye strain, back pain, and other physical issues. Some recommendations include giving ourselves as much leg room as possible, sitting in a good chair and sitting up straight, keeping our screens at eye level, and making sure that we have good light while working. It's also recommended that we take frequent breaks and that we rest our eyes as much as our bodies. Reporting for Radio MD News, I'm Scott Webb.
With warmer weather just around the corner, many are wondering what our summers will look like. Radio MD's Bill Klaproth has some answers to some seasonal questions about coronavirus.
So when it comes to summer, there are many questions, such as, is it safe to swim in pools or lakes, and does the virus spread through the water? In a story in NPR, the CDC says there is no evidence the virus that causes COVID-19 can be spread to people through the water in pools, hot tubs, spas, or water play areas. Checkmark, good. Can mosquitoes transmit the virus? This one is a straightforward no. This is a respiratory virus, not spread through blood. Checkmark, good. And as the country reopens, we may see a lot more temperature checks at airports or workplaces this summer. The experts say checking someone's temperature isn't a foolproof method for identifying infectious people when only 30% of the people who get hospitalized with the virus have fevers. So temperature checks at airports or workplaces may make us feel as if adequate precautions are being taken without actually accomplishing much. Checkmark, not so good. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
So with all this time at home, bored, looking for ways to stay active, well, a baby boom doesn't seem so crazy, right? Well, think again. A new survey from researchers at the University of Florence in Italy suggests this probably won't unfold during the COVID-19 pandemic. Researchers found that future economic difficulties are a big reason why couples are avoiding having kids right now, as well as how coronavirus could affect pregnancies. Of the almost 300 participants who said that prior to the pandemic they had plans to have a child, more than one-third abandoned their intentions when the pandemic struck. A community-based strategy in California is working to reduce hospital volumes by providing free, rapid drive-through testing and telehealth services for marginalized communities. But the initiative also helps once they've been diagnosed with what comes next. I sat down with one of the three founders of MyCOVIDMD, Dr. Brianna DeQuire-Young. Dr. DeQuire-Young, tell us more about MyCOVIDMD. How does it all work?
So MyCOVIDMD is sort of the culmination of the experiences of my co-founders and I in wanting to sort of figure out a better way and a different model for service for professionals and just figuring out how to reward them by using their talents to reignite, you know, the community and to serve the community. So, I mean, we started Shared Harvest Fund and Foundation back in 2018. And over the last few years, we have just amassed thousands of volunteers around the country who have just been waiting to serve and use their skills in the community. What we saw with the COVID-19 is that we would be able to use these volunteers to make sure that we provided a different model for the delivery of medical services to the uninsured and underinsured and sort of underprivileged in this crisis, who often fall through the medical cracks, right? So as an emergency physician myself, one of the things that we know is that testing and telling people what their test results are were just not enough. So one of the things that was important to us with my COVID MD initiative is to provide those wraparound services that you need after you tell someone that they're positive or negative for COVID-19. There's a lot of things from an emotional standpoint that happen when you get that diagnosis. There's a lot of things that need to happen from the social services aspect, right? If you're positive and you're taking care of your elderly grandmother or another family member who may need you, what do you do now? What are some services that are available in your community? Who do you turn to? Where do you go? How do you manage the anxiety that's created once you've been given that diagnosis, particularly after sort of watching the news and not necessarily knowing what's real, what's not, what's accurate information? So one of the things that were important for us is to make sure not only did we test, but did we trust the information that was being given to individuals? We test them and let them know what their status is. And we know that that is few and far between on a mass scale right now, just being the availability of tests. And we tether them to the social mental health support that they may need to get through this crisis. And then making sure that we treat them, right? How do we make sure that they get the services that they often, particularly those who are uninsured and underinsured, how do they get those services right to their front door, you know, and have someone that's available to them by phone? So it's just sort of our brainchild of a Shared Harvest Fund and Foundation and being physicians sort of coming right to the head and sort of really just cross-secting paths. And that's where my COVID-MD came from.
And you kind of touched on my next question, which is my COVID-MD is specifically for marginalized communities. You mentioned the uninsured, the underinsured. Why was this network so important for you guys to focus on?
Well, sure. I mean, this is the network that unfortunately often falls through the cracks of the medical system, right? You tell someone, hey, go get a test, but where do they go get a test?
Yeah.
Talk to your doctor about your symptoms. Some of them don't have primary care physicians, right? So, and in the age of COVID-19, a lot of these primary care physicians are not seeing new patients, not taking new patients. You know, the medical community is sorting out how they are engaging with their patients as it stands right now. Telemedicine is a big piece of what we offer as well, because we want to be able to have someone be able to have the convenience of speaking to a physician, keeping them out of the emergency departments unnecessarily. And as a frontline worker, as an emergency physician still actively practicing, I understand what the overwhelming burden that the physicians and nurses and staff and even, you know, environmental services, people who have to make sure these rooms are clean so that infections aren't spread. We're all part of that team. But there's a huge burden that happens when you're overwhelmed by, you know, individuals who may not necessarily have had to come to the ED. But where do they go? Where do they manage their anxiety? And how do they get tested? How do they get accurate medical information? How do they get medical care and follow-up care, right, when we send them home from the emergency department? So these are all the things that we thought about and we saw that were lacking in the current model, but particularly for people who don't have a medical home. And so for the underinsured and uninsured, this is the population that sometimes just really needs someone to take the time out to follow up with them, see how they're managing, and make sure that they're receiving accurate medical information. And so that's why it was so important for us to keep this a free system. And we're free because we have wonderful donors and people who support our mission and helping people get through this crisis.
When you say medical home, that just really struck me. What do you mean by that?
Medical home is the place where you go to not just get medical care, but to get information and to make sure you have someone that is managing you both through illness and through your well periods, right? So your medical home might be defined as not just your physician's office, but, you know, the social workers that maybe help you coordinate your care with your specialists and help you get in-home services and the things that are needed to completely take care of a patient. It's not simply just showing up to your appointment. It's, are we making sure that you're able to fill your prescriptions? Did we make sure that that's a prescription that's covered in your medical plan and won't bankrupt you? There's a number of things that go into having a totality of medical services that I think we all know, if you watch anything about the news, you know that we are unfortunately sorely lacking in this country and often gets pushed to the wayside because primary care physicians are being asked to do so much more with so little and even sitting in the hospital. So just having a sense of a medical home for people who either don't have one, don't have access to it, or don't even understand what services they may need and what they don't understand or what they don't know. What is the medical information that is missing here? What do they need, and identifying that for them?
So reading up on all the things that My COVID MD does, it also includes pairing people with what you all are calling critical crisis buddies. What does that mean?
Yeah. So the crisis buddies, the idea of this is, and we love this, is because that is the aftercare that doesn't necessarily happen. You know, you have testing sites that may already be using, say, telemedicine or setting up appointments to test people. But then what happens again after you get that diagnosis, right? How do you manage the anxiety? Who's following up with those patients in the 48 hours to 72 hours to make sure that their condition, if they say are positive, is not getting worse, and trying to intervene before it's too late, before they can get to the hospital? Crisis buddies take that sense of, now that you have someone that's helping you with the medical component, how do you manage the emotional component of being involved in a crisis like this that is triggering depression and anxiety for a lot of people who have these underlying disease and people who don't, right? Crisis buddy is a person that you can call to make sure that you get accurate information when you have medical questions. A crisis buddy is the person that helps you find the social services in your community that you may need because, let's say, again, for instance, we often find these are people who now may not be able to get to that, you know, elderly sick family member that they were taking care of, who also needs, you know, food. You know, how do we get food services? How do we get them making sure that, you know, we help coordinate how they can make sure that their bills are being put on hold, and how to just navigate the financial strain that is being created by COVID-19, and just having someone to talk to, because a lot of these things are, it gets overwhelming, you know, from all aspects. So just pairing them with someone that's in their neighborhood, in their community, who is, you know, culturally sensitive. I think that's a piece that unfortunately sometimes is missing. And so that's a big component for us, that we want to make sure that it's someone that matches them and it's someone that they're comfortable talking to and really gets their struggle. And I want to say that these crisis buddies are our volunteers. Mm-hmm. There are volunteers that, with our Shared Harvest Fund model, receive a stipend towards their student loan debt or emergency funds. Wow. We'd like to say thank you. We'd like to say thank you for taking your time out. We know that you're a busy professional and that you have other things that you could be doing, but this is what motivates people to keep going and to use their skills for good, right? And so we like to say thank you. And that's our model, is to say that, you know, these people who are burdened by student loan debt, and these individuals who are professionals who are burdened by student loan debt, they should be rewarded. It's, I think, a better model for a national service program than we currently have. And it lets people do the stuff that they care about, but also to not be themselves always so worried about their financial burdens, right? And so that's where our model comes in, and our donors and a large portion of our proceeds go to make sure that our community health partners, AKA our volunteers, who are amazing, get their own, you know, sort of financial health in order, if you will.
Oh, that's incredible. Absolutely. Yeah. And wrapping up here, obviously, My COVID MD is very patient driven, but how does this initiative in turn help hospitals and providers like yourself?
As a provider, I feel like I can safely speak to what is going on in the front lines, and looking at what's going on with my colleagues and my brothers and sisters in arms in places like New York and Louisiana. We need people to have accurate information. We need individuals to know when they need to go to the emergency department, so that the emergency department makes sure that they have space to treat those who are sick from COVID-19 and other illnesses. People are still having heart attacks. People are still, having bouts of depression and suicidality and a number of other things that don't stop in the emergency department because COVID-19 is here. So our job is to make sure that we educate people on what are the emergency signs to look out for and when it is important for you to go to the emergency department. It's also important that part of our wraparound services includes follow-up care by a physician and or other qualified provider, medical provider, who can follow up with them and say, hey, how's your breathing? Boy, you look like, you're not doing so well, or you're getting worse, or you're starting to have fevers now. Now is a time that we catch that person tell them to go to the emergency department when it's time and when it's appropriate and before they get too sick. And so that's why it's important for us to have that follow-up care with a physician beyond, I'm just going to do this swab or in our case, a finger prick test to tell you that you have COVID-19, like managing the flow of who's going in and out of the emergency department to some degree in the community will help the providers there take care of the people who actually need to be there.
Thank you so much, Dr. DeQueer Young, for your time and for this initiative. You can find out more about helping with COVID-19 at mycovidmd.org and find other volunteer opportunities at sharedharvestfund.org. This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Daily. Tell us about how your community is dealing with the pandemic or ask our staff a question at COVID19daily@radiomd.com. That, of course, COVID19daily@radiomd.com. We love getting mail just like you do. Have a great Tuesday and join us again tomorrow. I'm Caitlin White. Stay home and stay healthy.